And welcome to Pasco Hernando State College's Instructional Performing Arts Center. I'm Becky Shulkowski, and it's my honor to welcome you to this state-of-the-art facility on behalf of the PHSC District Board of Trustees. I'm excited for today's panel discussion, as the nursing workforce dilemma in Florida is impactful to me in multiple ways. As a member of the PHSC Board of Trustees, I'm interested in accessible, affordable, high-quality education for our community. And as president of BayCare Hospital Wesley Chapel, I'm interested in hiring graduates of those same high-quality workforce education programs. This panel is the first collaboration between PHSC and the Institute for Strategic Policy Solutions with St. Petersburg College. The impacts of policy, both federal and state, can cause significant changes to nursing and other healthcare professionals. And it's not just funding of educational programs or availability of nursing program spots that impact the workforce, but a wide range of legislation, such as the Assault or Battery on Hospital Personnel Act, or the Live Local Act regarding affordable housing, or the Florida Center for Nursing's headquartered at USF, creating a statewide action plan for the nursing workforce. All of these policy initiatives can impact the interest level and success of nursing education programs and the sustainability of high-quality nursing workforce. So thank you so much for joining us for this complex discussion. I hope you enjoy. I hope you learn. And now I'll turn it over to Kimberly Jackson, Executive Director of ISPS.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you so much for joining us. We're so happy to have future nurses and just a powerhouse panel. My name is Kimberly Jackson. Sincere thanks to Pasco Hernando State College for hosting us. We're especially grateful for your time and your beautiful space, and for Bayfront Help for sponsorship of today's program. For those of you who don't know what the Institute for Strategic Policy Solutions is, we are the vision of Congressman Bill Young, who created a space at St. Petersburg College to create social, political, and economic nonpartisan discussions to understand the appropriate scope of government and policy at St. Pete College, but for the Florida college system. So we're grateful to have this expert of panels discuss an important topic on nursing and workforce dilemmas in Florida. I'd like to introduce the esteemed panel. First, with Dr. Allison Hale, who is the Dean of Workforce Development and Career and Technical Education at Pasco State Hernando, and is our co-moderator and also a board member of the Institute for Strategic Policy Solutions. We're grateful for her time and talent. Next, we have Dr. Louisiana Lewis, who is the Dean of College of Nursing at St. Petersburg College and the Chair of the Florida Center for Nursing Board of Directors, and is our other co-moderator. And of course, she's one of our own at St. Pete College, and we're grateful to have her as well. Now we have our experts, well, at least for this panel. Dr. Kelly McAdams is the Associate Dean of Nursing at Pasco Hernando State College on the panel, as well as Simone Marstiller, the former Secretary of the Agency for Healthcare Administration, Jamie Hirschberger, Patient Care Administrator at Bayfront Health, St. Petersburg, and finally, Dr. Raina M. Letourneau, Executive Director of Florida Center for Nursing on the panel. I hope I said all of you ladies' names right. Thanks so much. And again, we're excited to have this. We want to remind the audience, our virtual audience, that we're grateful. You can learn more about what we do at isps.sbcollege.edu. You will have the opportunity to send questions via text to our esteemed panelists. Thank you, Dr. Allen, Dr. Hill, and Dr. Louisiana Lewis. Take it away.
Thank you. To start us off today, I have the first question to pose out to our panel, and actually I'm focusing this to Dr. Letourneau. The Florida Center of Nursing has recently provided its 2023 Nursing Education Report. What are the most salient themes found within the report?
Thank you for the question. Thank you for coming to me first. The Florida Center for Nursing is proud of our most recent report released. It's a nursing education report, which we do put out annually. So in January of 2023, we reported our findings from the previous academic year, where we surveyed 498 practical nurse programs and registered nurse programs throughout Florida. The most important themes that we found are qualified nursing students are getting turned away from programs. So we don't have enough capacity to be able to take all of the students who want to be nurses. Another theme that is important to recognize, because you might think, why are qualified applicants being turned away from programs, is that our report findings demonstrate that we don't have enough qualified faculty either. Those, I think, are major themes that I would like to put out to our panel.
Thank you.
And I would like to have some follow-up questions for you, Dr. Letourneau. What are the next steps that the FCN will take in relation to the nursing education report?
Thank you. So when we have our reports, our findings are going to guide and give us evidence to determine what the next steps are for our state. So really, what are going to be the innovative solutions that we can implement to solve our problems? When we think about not having enough capacity for the qualified candidates coming into the programs, and possibly because we don't have enough faculty to teach them, one of our biggest initiatives this coming year is to put together, develop an infrastructure for training and recruiting additional faculty members to serve throughout our state. So if I can go into a little bit more detail from our report.
Please do.
Thank you. When the nursing programs throughout our state identified that they have an increased number of vacancies, we don't have enough faculty to teach to meet the needs, we asked them a follow-up question of what are the barriers that you're facing related to recruiting the faculty members to come teach? And our programs throughout the state reported that the number one barrier to being able to fill the vacant faculty positions are a lack of qualified candidates. So it's going to be really important for the Florida Center to put together our robust quality programming to be able to train, produce quality faculty members that can then fill our vacancies.
Thank you for that. And this is the last question, I promise, as a follow-up, because we are at the Institute of Policy, right? I think a lot of people need to know a little bit about the Florida Center of Nursing and its legislative priorities from the state. Would you please kindly tell us a little bit more?
Sure thing. So the Florida Center for Nursing is identified in Florida statute. So for the future nurses, your faculty may tell you about the Nurse Practice Act, Chapter 464. Some of those words may sound familiar. So we are clearly defined in Florida statute. We have two major goals for the Florida Center. Goal number one is to develop a statewide strategic plan for the nursing workforce. So all of that entails being able to look at our data, what's going on in the state, where are our gaps, and then how can we build a statewide strategic plan to correct any imbalances between supply and demand of the nurses working. Our second major goal is to promote and enhance reward recognition and renewal activities for nurses in the state. So yes, it will be important to develop robust programs and have a pipeline into the nursing workforce, but it's going to be equally as important to recognize the value that nurses bring to the healthcare industry and make sure that we can retain nurses in our profession.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. As we go down the panel, I'm gonna direct the next question to Simone. The Bureau of Labor Statistics projected registered nursing to be the fastest growing profession through 2031, expected to grow by 6%, and reported 195,400 new registered nursing jobs will be added by the year 2031. How do we meet the demand?
Well, if I had the easy answer to that question, we'd be done here.
Yes.
But, a couple of observations. First of all, I do want to say, just from a personal and professional perspective, that nurses are the backbone of our healthcare system, the backbone. We could not do this without nurses, without the men and women who do this in our hospitals, in our nursing homes, and other facilities day in and day out. And so, you know, of course we've seen COVID had quite the effect on Florida's nursing workforce, as well as across the country. And I think that there are several things that Governor DeSantis and the legislature have put in place over the last couple of years. So they established, among other things, it's pipeline. It's prepping institutions, programs, employers, and learners through incentives for nursing education. Let's just call that pipeline. And funded that initially at $100 million last fiscal year. They also established the LINE program, which I think is fantastic. It's linking industry to nursing education, and it is designed to encourage our healthcare industry partners to partner with educational institutions to try to solve the very problem that you were just describing, to provide qualified and knowledgeable instructors, right, for our nursing programs and students. I believe that this session, the legislature is considering a bill, actually in both houses, to encourage individuals who have military and combat medical experience to enable them to get college credits for the work and experience that they did while on the battlefield. And what amazing training, right? Not just medical training, but battlefield, you know, you got to be tough. And you all know, and the men and women out there working in nursing know, you got to have grit. So I'm really excited to see that kind of thing. I think that, you know, Florida, we're seeing a time of significant economic growth and population growth. People are going to they're moving here, you know, in droves, which is fantastic. And I think we have a really good opportunity to provide incentives like the affordable housing program. There are, you know, loan forgiveness programs for nursing students that are available. We need to boost funding for those kinds of programs as well. And quite candidly, there are individuals who unfortunately left the nursing profession after COVID or during COVID because they were burnt out and it was hard, and we have a lot of people maybe retired early. We might even be able to entice those individuals back to come back and train up the upcoming generation. I think that we just need to be really creative in our thinking, but we can do this.
Thank you. This kind of, your answer follows into the next question, which I'll pivot to Dr. McAdams. How will colleges and universities attract nurses to become classroom professors with the increasing need for nurses?
Thank you for the question. I think that a lot of it will hinge on Dr. Letourneau's discussion of the plan for FCN, and that they have a plan for innovative solutions. They have a plan to help develop the training and the recruiting for faculty. I also think bringing some of our retired nurses back in. I think all of those things are things that will definitely help us lead to stemming that shortage, you know, hopefully. There is a lack of qualified candidates. I can speak to that from my own experience at PHSC and, you know, trying to fill our faculty positions. So we definitely need to work together for those solutions. Again, all of our programs, our government, our state government, hopefully, you know, will continue to provide incentives, things like stipends or, you know, in a high demand area, or things like tuition forgiveness, student loan forgiveness, and so on. You know, those are just some suggestions. But I think at PHSC, we certainly will work closely with our other organizations, our statewide organizations, to try to meet the demand.
Thank you so much. I would like to bring in the faculty perspective, because Dr. Letourneau is a professor at University of South Florida. So it's very important that we get her faculty perspective and what we can do.
Thank you. So echo what everybody is saying on the panel is making sure that we have those innovative solutions. So what are faculty members looking for? We're looking for resources that will allow us to do a really good job taking care of our students, just like nurses want to do a really good job taking care of their patients. So all of the nursing process that you learn as you're caring for your patients and your communities, we as faculty utilize to care for our students. So that's what we're looking for. And the way that we're going to do that and some innovative solutions are really going to be dependent on building academic practice partnerships, partnerships that have shared goals, and we can put together resources to accomplish our shared goal from academia and practice perspective. And so it's really important to recognize that the Florida Center for Nursing defines an academic practice partnership based on the AACN's definition. And we're not talking just about a clinical affiliation. It's not a partner because I send students to an organization. That's very valuable. I don't mean to say it's not. However, that's a clinical affiliation. And a true academic practice partnership would be academia and practice coming together to determine how can we work together to solve our problems, to make sure that we have qualified workforce caring for our patients.
Thank you so much, you both. Excellent. And my question will go to Simone. Staffing and providing continuity of care to patients have always been a priority for hospital organizations. But we understand that this has become more challenging, and patients are expressing concerns. How are you supporting continuity of care to meet the patient's needs?
All right, can you hear me good? So staffing is always on the top of your mind, right? Get nervous when you come out of school, what am I gonna have? What's gonna happen when I get out on the floor? What we're really focusing on at our facility is support. You have to have support. You're not going to just get there and get thrown out to the wolves. So if we support you, that then goes downhill to the patient, right? So took some notes so I don't get nervous. So what we're really focusing on, like I said, is staffing. We look at the acuity of the patients and just make sure that you have the right assignment, especially when you're in your program to in your residency and to in your orientation, how that trickles down to the patient, because yes, continuity of care is concerning. But if you work 3 12-hour shifts, then that's usually very easy if you do them in a row, because then you can keep the same care of the patient. Something we're very much focused on at Bayfront is bedside shift report. We hear about it, we talk about it, we're like, oh, I don't want to do it, but I'm telling you, we're really focused on it right now, and it is making such an impact and a difference with the patients, because then they're involved in their own care. And I think that communication also is a huge piece of that. If you're communicating with a patient that they know what is their, what their plan is and how you're going to help them get there. So safety for staffing, number one, that's on our forefronts of everybody's mind, right? We don't want to leave you out there hanging, and that's never going to be what's happening, which is why I'm so thankful to be up here with these people that are able to give you the schooling and the knowledge, and then we'll take it home from there when you get into the healthcare field. All right, what else did I miss?
No, I think you did beautifully. I think what you did was just threw a touchdown.
Oh, all right. I am a football fan. Go Bucks.
Yay! So my next question is for Simone. How have you observed the nursing shortage impacting healthcare facilities from the Agency for Healthcare Administration perspective? And I know you mentioned some of the legislative actions that are taken to address the issue already, but if there's anything else you feel that you need to add to that, please do so.
Well, you know, we know that and I hate to speak in terms of a nursing shortage. I mean, everything today is a crisis, right? But what we should be speaking, I think, in terms of is how do we shore up the nursing industry? How do we create the pipeline? How do we provide the supports? How do we, especially coming out of COVID, which was so transformative, how do we transform healthcare in a way that makes sense not only for the patients, but for the people who are actually providing the care? So over the last few years, especially coming out of COVID, we had, you know, hospitals were spending inordinate amounts of money to hire travel nurses. Mm-hmm. So the staffing agencies, you know, the law of economics, supply and demand, right? Mm-hmm. So supply was there, demand was high, prices were high. That was hard for hospitals to deal with. Nursing homes, our long-term care facilities, really, really suffered. And nursing homes in Florida and probably elsewhere, but they have some very strict and specific staffing requirements. And if at any time they dip below those staffing requirements, they have to put themselves on a moratorium, which means they cannot accept any new patients until they get back to the level. Well, you can imagine how hard that was during and coming out of COVID and in the years even going into. And so one of the things that that the legislature saw fit to do, I believe last session, was to take a look at those nursing home staffing standards and to tweak them a little bit to allow, say, CNAs to do some different things, you know, that kind of thing. So to kind of keep some of the pressure off of our long-term care facilities. There are some things that are going to be coming down the pike, and the legislature has been talking about it, and even across the nation, telehealth. One wouldn't think that that would be helpful to the nursing workforce, but it can be. From a time perspective, an efficiency perspective, I mean, imagine, you know, we talk about hospital settings and nursing home settings, but there are other settings in which nurses work and thrive. Mm-hmm. And telehealth and telemedicine is certainly going to be one of those things that's going to continue to make the job more effective, more efficient, and hopefully less stressful. Another advance that I think more hospitals are taking advantage of, I want to call it hospital at home, so acute care at home, which is an amazing endeavor. So instead of patients who need acute care being in the hospital for weeks, they're able to go home, where we know from research that outcomes are better, and nurses are able to provide care, not necessarily at the bedside, but sitting in front of a computer or talking to them on the phone, and it's fantastic. And those are the kinds of innovations that I think will be really important to entice new folks into the nursing workforce. We need new people, clearly. But I also think that for those of us who are operating in the healthcare space today, we've got to figure out how to transform even more coming out of COVID in particular, how to transform the healthcare workspace, mm-hmm. so that individuals who are coming to Florida and people who are coming out of high school look at nursing as a career that they want to get into once again.
Thank you so much. That was excellent. What I walked away from is, how do we show up for nursing? It's not really a nursing shortage, but how do we collectively show up for nursing? And that led into my next question, because nurses are overwhelmed, and in many cases, you know, hospitals are still unable to provide proper staffing due to the current shortage or crisis, you may call it. And this question is for anyone on the panelists. Can you discuss how we can better support our nurses to minimize burnout? That is a word that continues to be at the forefront of nursing.
I think I'll try to go first here. So this was something, so I have just recently stepped away from overseeing nursing education, but when I was in that realm, I had all new graduate nurses. I love each and every one of you. We're so excited to have you. But what I've noticed as a common theme is their mental health or mental awareness, right? You're going through so much. It's a brand new experience, and we've noticed that where we are currently. So we have a well-being program that we've launched. It's an app on your phone. This is just one option where you just kind of log in and you do a daily check. They help you go out and walk. They can offer services, not only just mental health, but financial, things along those lines, things that are weighing on your mind, where that can really give you an outlet to talk. We have an EAP program, pet therapy that's coming soon. How many can't be sad when there's dogs, right? Because we're able to have them come. So we really have a big focus on that, truly. I'm not trying to make light of it, but I've seen it just even in the last couple of days. People say, I can't do this, but why? What is it? So asking them for solutions, they want to make sure they have support from their leaders, right? So we have a very big open door policy. If you're feeling, you know, something's not feeling right, or you're really concerned, you have to speak up, because we don't know what you're thinking. I think that's a good message for me to share with you guys. And just make sure that you're talking to your leaders. If you're uncomfortable there, you have educators, things along those lines, because our biggest goal is to make you successful, because you got in this to take care of patients. And if we can't take care of you, you're not going to give the best care to the patients.
And I would like to follow up with that. Just from an education perspective, I think now we are much more in tune to those mental health needs of our students. And for myself, my faculty, it's very important that we are paying attention to those things. So we do encourage our students to learn self-care. When many of us went to nursing school, it was, you don't do anything if your patient needs you. You don't take a break. You don't have lunch. You don't go to the restroom. You don't do anything if your patient needs you. So we're very much trying to help our students learn that self-care, and that, yes, you are there for your patient, but if you don't take care of you, then who will be there for the patient? Who will be there for your families? You know, burnout is not a good place to be. And I've read multiple research reports where it states that the United States does not have a shortage of nurses. We have a shortage of nurses who want to work in nursing. And I think burnout is part of that. So if we start teaching it to our students at the academic level when they first come in, and we role model that to them, self-care, boundaries, those types of things, I think that that will carry over into their career and hopefully will help mitigate that burnout.
That is an excellent point. Thank you so much. So my next question, it kind of leads into our seasoned nurses. You know, they don't want to be forgotten, because we're talking about nursing workforce shortage, or how can we support nursing? I'm going to try to change my tune a little bit. But how do we support and ensure that our seasoned nurses have the opportunity for their professional development and for their training, and know that we have not forgotten about you? Anyone on the panel?
I'm going to take it from the perspective that I've been a nurse for more than 20 years. So I'm one of those seasoned that don't want to be forgotten. And I really appreciate the well-being training that's happening pre-licensure. And that's what's going to take a culture change. So as we have the new generation, the future nurses, this is part of their norm, and they'll bring that well-being, self-care norm into the practice setting, because nurses like me, who have been doing it for more than 20 years, fall into that category of not taking a break, working extra hours. You know, even before the pandemic, data from the American Nurses Association in 2016 identified that 68% of nurses report that they'll put the needs of others ahead of themselves. So when we're in the practice setting, and Jamie, you could probably speak to it, you can offer well-being programs to those practicing nurses, but they can't figure out, and I don't mean to say it because they're not smart. Nurses are so smart, but we're having a hard time figuring out how to put our own needs first, because we've never done that before as a profession. And so I don't know if I really answered your question or just added some things to talk about. However, it's going to be really important. It's going to take systematic changes and culture changes to the nursing profession.
Thank you so much. Anyone else?
You know, just a thought. So I'm a lawyer. I don't want to hear any hissing from the audience. I'm a lawyer, and I think of the challenges that lawyers have, you know, with the law firm process, as they're working and they're hard and they're, you know, trying to become partner, et cetera, et cetera. Not something I did, because I worked for the public sector for all of my legal career. But it seems to me that for our seasoned nurses and professionals, that there should be, and I'm getting ready to spend your money now, that there should be incentive programs that employers are able to put in place. It doesn't have to be huge, but incentive programs to encourage our seasoned professionals to, I don't know, teach, mm-hmm. mentor, get that additional certification. I mean, we all human beings aspire to these things, and all of the men and women in the profession and who are coming into the profession are there because they care about their patients and they want to do something for their fellow man. But we also are ambitious, and we want to get everything we possibly can out of our careers. And I think if employers can find a way to incentivize that kind of, get some extra education, get another certification, and find ways to give the kind of credit for the things that our up-and-coming students mm-hmm. need, I think, that would be a fantastic way to go. Just an idea.
Well, thank you both for eloquently putting that together. So I hear culture change. We need a systematic shift and also providing incentives for those seasoned nurses. And I love what you say, but even the return back to nursing, that may be a possibility. And that leads directly into the next question. We're just ebbing and flowing here. There's a study that found that currently up to 30% of our first-year nurses are leaving the profession within the first year. And then a staggering over 50% are leaving after the first year. How can we help, support, and train/transition our new nurses better, and in addition to help them to be safe practitioners? Anyone from our panel?
I'm going to take it. They weren't quick enough, so I'm doing it. So this is something that I'm very passionate about, the transition to practice, making sure that we are facilitating the movement from our future nurses from academia into the practice setting and setting them up for success, putting future nurses into a place where they'll be able to flourish and thrive throughout their career is so important. And I'm going to go back to talk about the academic practice partnerships as an example, because I don't think there's any one right answer or easy answer to this question of how do we do it. But I can use an exemplar. Building those academic practice partnerships are going to be so important, offering mentorship opportunities that can better inform the new graduates or our future nurses to the opportunities that present themselves in the workforce. So similar to when you were talking about telehealth opportunities, home health opportunities, nursing home opportunities, a lot of times, pre-licensure students don't understand or are not aware of all of the opportunities that present. So if we had an academic practice partnership, which the Florida Center would definitely facilitate the creation of, for any of our institutions in Florida, but having that academic practice partnership where, for example, Bayfront and Pasco Hernando, you can come together, we can put together a program where our pre-licensure students from Pasco Hernando can come and watch a presentation from Bayfront. Bayfront can give the information to the pre-licensure students about what is our organization, what does nursing look like for our organization, what do the patients look like within our organization. And then those students will be more informed and make better informed decisions to where they want to go for employment post-graduation. I think that would really impact our first-year turnover rates, because what we're seeing is that students will come into an organization or a specialty setting and not really, it's not what you thought it was, but you don't know until you get there. Your pre-licensure education may not have given you the opportunity to work or experience these settings. So if we can intentionally and purposefully build the academic practice partnerships to better inform our students, I think that could be a benefit.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Because I don't know. In the normal course of nursing education, because again, I'm coming at this from, you know, my lawyer experience. So young lawyers in Florida who have not yet become licensed, and even sometimes while they're still in law school, have the opportunity to become certified legal interns, which means they can go to court and represent clients under the, under a practicing attorney, right? So, I mean, Florida has CLIs in prosecutors' offices and public defenders' offices. Is there something like that in nursing education? Because it seems to me that kind of expanding that kind of thing mm-hmm. would really address the mm-hmm. issue that we're talking about right now.
So if I may put on my academic hat, right, that is one of the innovative solutions that the academic and organizational partnership is looking at. How can we get our student nurses safely at the bedside a little earlier? We have not quite figured out the whole package, but we're having those dialogue.
Yes, and not to jump in, but colleagues from across the state are looking at all these alternatives in the different workforce arenas. And one area that I'm interesting to hear to our sister college to our south is looking at apprenticeships with nursing. So I'm curious to see how that fits and how that would work in and what processes they're going through. Because I'm interesting to hear, because they're starting it this year. So I'd be curious to see what the outcomes are.
I know that we use Student Nurse 1 and Student Nurse 2 opportunities at our facility, and that gives you, if you're enrolled in nursing school and you become a Student Nurse 1, you get the opportunity to work similarly to a nursing assistant at that point with a little bit more relationship with the nurse. And then Student Nurse 2 is your last semester of nursing school, and you are then partnered with a nurse there until the last whole semester. So you really get a whole eye-opening view of what you're getting into, right? Do you really like where you are? And you have that support. So I think it's really important to be able to know that those things are out there. You don't have to come in there blind if you have the opportunity to do that. And it's not going to interfere with your studies too much, because that's number one, right? But we do have like the full-time, part-time, the flexibility piece, because we know that that's what's most important is your schooling. But that is an opportunity. And we also partner and we do the mentorships, preceptorships with the school. So you also follow that nurse along there too. And we see that as a facility, as a on-the-job interview, if you will. So just know that that's an opportunity there as well. And we will be doing, if you're at our facility and you're getting ready to wrap up your last semester, then yes, we're going to start bringing the CNO and myself and the other patient care administrator and introducing ourselves and trying to really show you what Bayfront is all about. So just a little bit more opportunity to get out there to see what it looks like.
Thank you. Do you have?
And also one of the things that we are sure that we do is anytime that any of our academic partners do share with us opportunities for externships or things like that that you can do as students as you move through the curriculum, we do ensure that all of our students have that information. The externship allows them to work at a little bit higher level than, say, maybe a patient care tech or a nurse's aide, but they're working with a staff member and they're being paid for it. So, you know, that also gives them a good introduction to a site and what's it really like to work there.
Thank you. Do you want to jump in?
May I just say
sure,
a quick comment about
ahead.
The apprenticeship programs? So I support apprenticeship programs. They are new to healthcare, and I think when people hear apprenticeship, sometimes the mind goes towards trade or technical occupations, and we have an opportunity. As we're calling for innovative solutions, let's be innovative and let's determine how an apprenticeship model could be successful in healthcare, specifically for an RN occupation. We can have opportunities to really develop pre-apprenticeship programs, what that looks like, having the partnership. So I think it's a great innovative solution to better prepare our future.
Thank you. And before I ask my last question, I'm actually going to pose that if you all out in the audience, whether virtual or here on site, if you have any questions, You can text your questions to the information on the screen, so that way we'll get to those shortly. So my last question to the panel, what do you see as the trends in nursing for this year and beyond?
That's a hard one.
Don't jump at once. You're like, no, I don't want the mic to shut. Go.
So what are the trends related to the nursing workforce is the question. So I would like to break that down and to think that there are different branches, and each branch of the nursing workforce has its own trends. So nursing education, clinical working. Some of the trends with nursing education, very much what we've discussed on the panel today, is looking at innovative opportunities, making sure that we have academic practice partnerships. Closing that academic practice gap is going to be very important. So I think that's the major trend in nursing education, and it does blend over into the practice. Specific to the workforce, I think the major trend is really going to be looking at how do we change the culture? How do we make sure that nurses care for themselves? Because if we don't care for ourselves, like you mentioned, we're not going to be healthy enough to do our jobs.
A few things that I foresee happening in the near, and maybe distant future, but in the near future. First, I want us all to keep in mind that Florida is already home to, nearly 6 million individuals who are 60 and older. And I'm not quite there yet, but I will be in a couple of years. And this is a population that's going to grow to, 30% of Florida's population by the year 2030. And while people are living longer because we're healthier and we know better about certain things, there will still be an increasing need for long-term care nursing. And as skilled nursing facilities take on more acute care patients and, take them so that folks aren't in hospitals, nurses are going to need to be in those environments as well. And so I hope that we see in nursing education a focus on working with elder patients in our long-term care facilities. Second, I know that there is going to have to be continued focus on incenting nurses and physicians as well, but nurses to serve patients in rural and underserved areas. That's going to, implicate Medicaid to a degree. But that's such a big need. Rural hospitals, communities, we're talking about telemedicine. There are many people in Florida who don't even have broadband. You know what I mean? So those are things that I think we're going to need to see that happen. And the third thing I think from a workforce perspective is we're going to be starting earlier, building the pipeline. So more talking to high school and middle school aged kids to get them interested in healthcare as a profession and as a career. I'd love to see more of that, and I think we will.
Excellent. Some of the questions from our participant. The first one I would bring forward is they wanted to understand how we are further exploring licensed practical nurses in the acute care setting post-pandemic. We know there has been a shift. Where they're going back into the hospitals.
So we have, in the last year, started to use LPNs in the acute care setting. Currently, we have them in our mom-baby area and our rehab section. So we're able to utilize them to help close the gap because there is an RN shortage. So how do we partner together and get the support? So LPNs have been very excited to have the opportunity to join. In the inpatient world, they've said, I've never even seen anything like this, and they truly are very excited to work alongside the RN. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that coming. We have, I think, also just partnered with another school to also help get them in for clinicals. This is brand new for us, a new territory that we're navigating, but very excited to have them.
Excellent. Thank you.
So one of the questions that was posed What policy recommendations would you offer to the state or nursing board to ensure students have access to clinical sites or clinical partners?
I'm going to take this one from the data.
Sure, go for it.
From the data point of view, one of the opportunities we have for improvement in Florida and across the nation, so we're not unique, is to increase the clinical capacity. But what that would look like in Florida and what the Florida Center for Nursing has started to investigate is conducting a statewide study to see what is our clinical capacity right now. We anecdotally know that we don't have enough clinical spaces, and specifically in the acute care settings, for all of the nursing students to be able to perform their direct care opportunities. We also know that there are many PN and RN programs that require their students, because of their geographic location, requires their students to drive 2 hours to get to a clinical site. And so when we're looking at being able to put forth policy recommendations, we first need to make sure that we have the data, and that's what the Florida Center is doing. When I said we're going to start investigating, how do we put together our statewide study? We want to be able to measure the clinical capacity across the state. We want to know how many institutions accept students, how many institutions have additional opportunities, and then being able to utilize those findings to guide our policy recommendations is where we're going to go.
Thank you so much. The next question is, have you ever considered how older nurses can play a part-time role in our current nurse shortage?
We are utilizing that currently with flexibility, because the older nurses, myself also over 20 years, so I understand where they're coming from, but they can't do the 12-hour shifts anymore. They don't want to do the 12-hour shifts anymore. So what we've been able to do is, flexibility is key, right? We all have a schedule. Some have kids in school that they need to pick up from daycare. So can they come and help us with a morning rush and maybe break for lunches, things along those lines? How can we utilize their knowledge and skills? Can we utilize them to teach classes that we didn't have our own capability of doing so because they were back out on the bedside? So really looking at how to maximize and leverage their skills with flexibility, I think, is key.
In nursing education, I think that a lot of our more experienced nurses are vital to things like clinical groups and doing clinical rotations, coming into the lab and helping our students learn the lab, helping them learn professional socialization. What does it mean to be a nurse? What does that really mean? Because, you know, in the rush of trying to teach a lot of content and trying to absorb everything that you have to absorb as students, I think it's easy to forget, I am going to be a nurse. And that is a very big word. So helping you learn those types of things, I think that comes from a nurse who has been experienced and definitely has that passion and that love for the profession.
Thank you so much. We have one more question from the audience. And as a dean, I cannot answer this, but how can we increase pay for our nursing instructors or professors to entice them to work at our colleges and universities? And we know that, you know, things are changing economically, you know, and I think that some of the things that, or some of the themes that came out after COVID was that nurses just want the money, right? But I think it's more than that. And I think I kind of went off the question, but what can we do to entice them to come back to teach or stay in a teaching profession?
The programs that I mentioned earlier, the pipeline and the line, those are specifically designed to provide funding to state colleges and universities that have nursing programs to use those funds to do recruiting for instructors and, you know, obviously enhance the programs. And what's great about both pipeline and the line program is that they are both also dependent on student outcomes. Mm-hmm. That's huge. That means that the Florida legislature is investing in the future of nursing in the state of Florida, but also ensuring that the men and women coming out of nursing school are stellar. And that is fantastic news for the citizens of the state of Florida who need healthcare, myself included. So, but I think that we will continue to see those kinds of funding programs supported and created, and that should help. It's not going to solve the problem, but that should help.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
And that takes to all of our questions from the audience. So as we come to a close, I would like to ask each panelist for a brief closing statement.
I'm not shy. I'll go first. I'll take this one first. Thank you. So in closing, I would like to thank you for the opportunity to contribute to the panel discussion and thank my fellow panelists for engaging discussion. Very much appreciate all of you and the moderators. To the audience, please know that the Florida Center for Nursing is a resource here for our state. So we are proudly headquartered at the University of South Florida, but we serve our state, all levels of nursing education and all levels of practice. So if you need resources, if you're interested in collaboration or in any of our services, don't hesitate to reach out. We will have additional reports coming out this year, so every year you can anticipate that our nursing education report will be disseminated. We also anticipate having our supply and demand reports coming out very soon. So we want you all to have the data to know what's happening and what's relevant in our state of Florida so that when you go forth and make decisions, you'll be making data-driven decisions. So in closing, the Florida Center is here to serve our state, and we're honored to do so. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, this has been a fantastic discussion, and I knew it would be. And I'm honored to be part of this panel and part of the conversation. I think the one thing that I'd like to leave everyone here with is there is so much to be hopeful for and to be positive about the nursing industry and career in the state of Florida. I'm excited about it. People who are thinking of entering the profession know that we're excited to have you. And year by year, day by day, we are coming up with ways to support everyone who wants to be in the profession and everyone who is in the profession. But I will leave everyone in the audience with this. Conversations like this need to happen more often, and we need to broaden the number and type of participants. And the reason I say that is because, as someone who has worked in government a long time, I know that in order to reach solutions that are going to be workable and sustainable for the long haul, that you need to have everybody, all the stakeholders at the table at the same time to have input and give buy-in. So what I would love to see moving forward is this conversation expanded to include the Board of Nursing, Florida State University, more hospital administrators, practicing nurses who are in the trenches, and students, exactly, so that we can have a 360-degree conversation, because that, in my opinion, take it for what it's worth, but in my opinion, that's where the best decision-making will be made.
Thank you.
Wow, I have to follow that. my message is, first, I'm echoing everything you guys are saying. Thank you. Happy to be here. Very excited to be a part of this discussion. But I want to take a minute just to thank you. You guys are taking the step forward, right? You decided to get into nursing to take care of patients. And I think that you just take that with you and keep it in your pocket and close to your heart as you go through this. It's a journey. So just remember you're not alone. Remember why you want to be a nurse, and that you're going to be supported along the way. And also, that I was going to end with, stealing from her shamelessly, self-care. please make sure you're taking care of yourself, because again, you can't take care of your patients unless you're taking care of yourself first. So thank you.
Thank you.
And I also thank you for allowing me to be part of the panel. It has been an amazing conversation, and I learned an awful lot today, so I appreciate that. The things that I would like to share, one was remember your why. Why did you choose to become a nurse? Because those are the things that will sustain you on your most stressful days, and you will have more stressful days than nursing school, although right now that's hard to believe. Trust me, there are days, but the other days make it so worth it. Work collaboratively, support each other. Nurses need to stick together, right? We need to make sure that we are supporting each other, that we're a safe place for each other to speak to each other, to have opinions, to cry, to do whatever it is you need to do to get through, but support each other and be strong together. Think about what you can do to support your profession, okay? This is a profession that will give and give and give to you, okay? What can you do to give back a little bit? Be part of the ANA, be part of FNA, be part of your Student Nurses Association, be part of so on and so on and so on, right? Do all of those things that help you really improve your profession. So get involved. And again, as everyone has said, take care of you. Make sure that, you know, you are in the best mental, physical, well-being in order to take care of your patients and to be with your families. So that would be my message.
So thank you so much. I just would like to thank our panelists for such an extraordinary job. And your thoughts, your statements, your ideas, your innovative solutions were so important to be heard today. So I just want to thank you, and I will ask the audience to give you a round of applause.
I concur, and we will take that charge. At the Institute, it is our goal always to convene these conversations. We try to get the best experts, diverse thought, and to make sure that the conversation is real and impactful. I want to thank our co-moderators for taking that charge. I know often I make the ask, and they're like, what do you want me to do now? So I'm very grateful that you all took the charge and led. I hope that you all enjoyed a very in-depth conversation about your future profession that will take you a long time, and we will try to take that charge to further the conversation. If you haven't done so, for our audience in person, also virtually, please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and go to our website. We have a lot of these programs, not with a specific topic, but with many topics where we explore in-depth issues, because our goal is to bring a lot of people to the table to solve issues that we just can't, but the conversations need to happen.